Twitter. Our RSN Legends series continues today. We've had some of the biggest names in Australian sports, certainly from the world of Australian football. And today's guest is no exception to that. On this day, he made his debut. In 1972, July 15, 1972, he made his debut for the St Kilda Football Club. Now, some people wouldn't even know he played for St Kilda, but he did. 53 games for the Saints, 121 for the Tigers, and then decided that coaching was a good career opportunity and did that 718 times to be the record holder in Australian football. It is great to have Mick Malthouse with us on our Legend Series this morning on RSN 927. Good morning, Mick.
Good morning on this locked-in day. Another
day. Have you been out for your walk yet, Mick?
No, I'm actually, believe it or not, I've had a phone call from Merv Cohn to say, come on, let's get going. So once we're finished here, we'll be hitting the track. Merv's had a couple of knee replacements, so he's on the about the 2 to 2.5 hour time frame. So we'll get some hours in and get out in some fresh air.
Now, your time in football is so extensive. We could talk for 15 weeks with you, but we're going to condense this. We'll let you get to Merv at some stage this morning. We're going to condense this. And on this day, 1972, Mick, you played your first game for the Saints. What do you remember about this day?
That's a very good question. Absolutely nothing.
Nothing?
Not a thing. Well, I can tell you what I do know about it. I got a game. I was in the seconds. Travis Pays pulled out. So I got my first game that way. I woke up on the Sunday morning and found out that I'd played a senior game. I actually got knocked out.
Oh,
right. I got knocked, apparently. I got cleaned up in the first couple of minutes, played until half time. It was wet at the Western Oval at the time.
Yep.
And coach Gene said to me, or said to the team, you guys better change your boots, you're slipping and sliding all over the place, which I did, apparently, sitting next to Jimmy O'Day, and I said, I think I'll change my boots, and he's gone, okay, and then I said to him, I think I'll change my boots, he's gone, right, I better call the doctor over, so I realised I had a little bit of concussion, so I don't remember anything about my first game.
Oh, that's a disappointment, Mick. A massive build-up. You get your first crack and you don't remember a piece of it.
Well, it's quite unique, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's something I didn't want it to happen too often because, it's when you play a good game or a reasonable game, you want to remember it. So it's the bad ones you want to forget.
No, 100% correct. Although you wouldn't have played many bad ones, I wouldn't have thought. But coming from North Ballarat, I mean, being in the big time in the VFL, what was it like?
Well, what was it like? Well, it was, as a kid growing up, your ambition really. I mean, I wanted to play the top level football, but the top level to me was early days was North Ballarat.
Yeah.
I didn't have, I was a good footballer. I wasn't a great footballer, and but I barracked for the Pies, and up and down the, if it was too wet outside, you'd be kicking the socks around inside the aisle of it was Peter McKenna or it was Carl Dittrich or it was someone, and you just admired them from a distance. The Saints were a pretty good side. They played off in 1971 against the Hawks. Probably should have won that game. So they were a reasonable side. When I got invited down as a part of the zone in those days, I played my three practice matches and then was told, listen, you better go back to Ballarat and enjoy your footy because you're not quite going to make it. So... And you look around you and you see Cowboy Neal and Dittrich and Smith and Davis and Lawrence and you think they're spot on. I mean, what am I doing here? So it was a real privilege to actually play in those practice matches.
Yeah.
Because Alan Jones was a coach, and so when you're a kid from Ballarat, you look down and you think, well, Melbourne's the pinnacle of all football in those days, and. So anyway, I went back to Ballarat, played a few games, and come back that same year. So I was a bit lucky, sliding doors effect in many respects. But so the ambition as a kid was just to play, as high as you can get. But certainly didn't think I was capable of playing league football.
And you played 53 games in the end at St Kilda, but you also played in finals. As you said, you were part of a pretty strong team. But then. You got told to go. Did you get told to go to Richmond, or was it your choice to go to Richmond?
Oh, it's sunny days. My naivety was I got a couple of phone calls from clubs, and I said to my wife, Nanette, aren't they nice, you know, ringing up to see how I'm going. And, you know. Anyway, I can't remember the actual circumstances, but on June 28, I think it was, or June 27, I got a phone call to say, look, we'd like you to come in and sign up. You've been cleared to Richmond. And I thought,
right.
Oh, okay. So I went and signed up, and that night, because you work, and I was working for a semi-government place, so I caught the train down to Moran, where I lived, and went and got my boots. And as I was walking out, I bumped into the reserve coach, and he said, what are you doing? You're not training. And I said, well, I've just been cleared to Richmond. And he said, oh, I didn't know that. So, strange things. 2 days, well, one day later, actually, it was a Tuesday, we flew out to Adelaide and played a game of footy. I sat next to Tommy Hakey, and then we had a game there. That was that sort of strange series that you had in those days. Then I trained again on the Thursday, and then I played my first game for Richmond. I'd say it would be close to July 1, July 2, or something like that anyway. But whatever it was, you're cleared pretty quickly. When I went to Richmond, there were four or five other players that had been at other clubs. Ian Scrimshaw at Hawthorn, I think Dizzy Lynch from Geelong, or Footscray, Robinson from Carlton, and Graham Gaunt from Melbourne. So we all turned up in those last couple of days before clearances closed. So it was really strange. It was a strange sort of system. In fact, it was a good system, but it was strange.
So the 19th of June, you played your last game for the Saints in 76, and the 3rd of July, Mick, you're pretty spot on. You played your first game for the Tigers in round 14 in mid-year. Fascinating.
Yeah, that's the way it worked in those days.
And one of those games, Mick, that you played for Richmond, you went on to play 121 games there, of course, was the 1980 Premiership win. I'm hoping that you remember more about that than you remember about your first game.
Oh, I certainly remember it. Yeah, it was quite extraordinary. I guess by that stage, I was 27 years of age. There was only five or six players that would have been older than me, and all of those players, or basically all those players, had played in multiple premierships. And it was one of those years where we started to make good. We started to believe in ourselves. Tony Jewell was the coach. We started to dominate sides. And it was one of those years when you think, no, this is not getting away from me. So I think the senior players put real pressure on some of the kids coming through. You know, I'm talking kids like Mark Lee in the ruck, Michael Roach, full forward, Dale Waitman as a rover. And we got them on side as far as thinking, look, it's not going to happen forever, so let's make the most of it. So it was a fantastic year. Some, you know, great friends. And, I mean, your friendship seems to grow with premierships. And, you know, you've bumped into Michael Roach walking around the MCG the other night, actually. And, you know, it's funny, you just look back on little bits and pieces that took place. I'll never forget looking up the ground and seeing him jump over the pack and take that massive mark against Hawthorn, which is in folklore, of course. And these are things that I suppose are synonymous with teams that you go on and you win a premiership. Not saying you don't make friends in other times, but I think there's a bond, real bond, and you guys would all know about that.
Mick, when did you know...
Yeah, well, that's right. We all do. Oh, sorry, Adam, go.
No, sorry, Cheryl. I was just going to say, Mick, when did you know that you were going to be a coach? Because obviously you got into it quite young, but when you were playing towards the end of your career, did you know that that's what you wanted to do? And were you already starting to formulate how you were going to go about it? How did that all unfold for you?
Yeah, well, funny enough, you're right. Midway through my 20s, you don't have to look too far around and see players retiring 28, 29 those days. A few would go into their 30s. And again, there wasn't... There was nothing in my mind that said I'm going to coach VFL football or AFL football. It was more the case of I'd like to stay in the game when I finish, whether I go back to Ballarat or whatever. Pretty set in Melbourne, mind you. We had two girls by this stage, and thinking, you know, where do you coach? And when you finish, what happens? So when it did come about, I had a really bad injury in 1979 before the 1980 finals, actually. I had reconstructed knee and ankle. And I thought that might have been the finish. So I started making some preliminary plans then to explore coaching, whether it be in the bush or, as I say, back to Ballarat or VFA or something. As it turned out, at the end of 83, when in my last year, I approached Wangaratta. Wangaratta approached me, and we had a... I had their vinyl, their club song, so that was quite interesting. And then I had an opportunity to put in for Central Districts, which I missed out on. Cowboy Neil got the Central Districts job. And then a couple of months later in January, the great Shane O'Sullivan gave me a call and said, would you be interested in coaching Footscray, which was out of the blue. But I've got to say, when I say out of the blue, he spoke to me the previous year, but not in terms of coaching their senior side, just good friendship. So that's how it came about. But in my wildest dreams, I never thought I'd be coaching a VFL club at 30. But, you know, these things happen and you grab hold of it and you hang on.
Mick, you've had a great amount of success, both, you know, as we mentioned in that 1980 game and throughout your coaching career. I want to ask you something you mentioned. It was about that confidence and that belief that you started to build in 1980 and that really want to get it done and make the most of an opportunity. Is there something that you feel like has worked that's been consistent across those years that you were able to be really successful across those teams? Was there because sometimes you're in something and you think, oh, we just need a spark, and when you're living it and when the spark is there, it's like you want to bottle it. Is there something that you feel like has been a real key to those successes?
Well, I think first and foremost, you've got to have trust. If you don't have trust in one another, you've got nothing. So once you build that trust and you start to believe in the direction you're going, and you've got enough players on board, or enough people on board. You need a lot of people. If you go back over the last 20 years, and you could probably go back to this, but let's work on 20 years. No team has won a premiership. It's been a club. And what by that I'm saying, you've got to have the board absolutely on side, and they're going to be travelling in the same direction, or the direction you're travelling what they want. Then you've got to have administration that will support you totally. And then from there, it's your role is to make sure you get those players travelling. They've got different personalities, but believing in what you've said and where we're going. So it is all built on trust. Now, the moment any of that breaks down, the board aren't necessarily on song with you, or someone in the administration is not on song, no matter how good your side is, I've seen it happen, it doesn't work. So it's everything I stand for is to build on that loyalty and trust that you can get that in your players and they have it in you. The moment that breaks down, everything breaks down.
Mm. That makes a bit of sense when you think about it. And that first year when Shane O made the call, Mick, going back to 84 at the Dogs, you walk in from being a player to the senior coach very, very quickly. And I imagine there's not a lot of support in terms of resources and personnel floating around. So you go from being just one of the boys to being obviously the coach and guiding the whole ship. How difficult was that transition, considering I imagine there wasn't too many assistant coaches or development coaches helping you out?
No, well, I don't want to be a clever dick here, but funny enough, when I got to Footscray, I found it very, very, I'm not going to say easy, because life's not easy as a football coach, but the transition was good. I was, you know, as you indicated, I had Shane O'Sullivan for start off as the CEO of the football club. Now, not that he interfered with the football, but he was football mad. And so that was a real great bond. We're about the same age. One of the best and brightest football brains I've ever come across is Wayne Walsh. And I was absolutely lucky to have Wayne Walsh there. Now, don't forget, we're all part-time. I was part-time. I was still working the semi-government job. So 15 months I coached Footscray and also worked because, you know, they're not that flush with money. So And you've got to back yourself. You know, I had a couple of young kids. Oh, both sides, we had three kids, and you know, there's one on the way. So you've got to be careful what you do to make sure that you plan for your family, but also make sure you get the most out of a football club. So, and Donnie McKenzie was there. Now, Donnie McKenzie was a former coach, and people say to me, well, very careful about former coaches because I want a coach. No, I had him and Alec Gardner, as I said, Wayne Walsh. They all had their different jobs. We turned up at 4:30, 5 o'clock. We coached the side, and we got the best we possibly could out of a money ball club. I mean, at the end of the day, we had a sieve, and they, football players fell into it, and whatever was shaken out sometimes, because people didn't want to go to Footscray. We picked up Duperuzel and Bamblett and Kellett and Foster and a whole host of people that were really dedicated to wanting to play football. So those players made it so much easier for me. Then, and the players that were already there, Purser, Beasley, Royal, Wallace, Kennedy, Gronewagen, they, all of them just, and McPherson's, all they wanted to do was to play good footy. And one I've missed out of the whole lot was Dougie Hawkins. I mean, he made life a lot easier because you were able to see from another angle, from the Francis Burkes and Kevin Bartlett and Royce Hartz, you look at them and then you look at Dougie Hawkins and there's no difference. They all love the game, it's just they come from different areas and they have different approaches. So I thoroughly enjoyed my time at the Dogs and it wasn't that hard. I mean, we had hardship, but it wasn't as if it was daunting, like I didn't hide behind walls and doors and thinking, I don't want to be out there. You've got to meet those things head on and you've got to look at yourself as an equal with anyone on match day. Still have respect for those greats, but on match day, you've got to go out there as an equal.
So, Mick, it's really interesting that as a player, you had Alan Jeans and Tom Hafey as two of your coaches, two of the greatest coaches of all time. Did they help shape you, and did you use either of those two as a mentor for yourself, or did you have someone else that you would call on in times of challenge, or did you just do it your own way? I'm really interested as to who shaped you as a coach, because you're one of the greatest now of all time when you look back on it.
Well, I think my upbringing shaped me more than anything else. You know, my father, my mother, my wife, players shape you. But look, I learned a lot from Jeans and Hafey, and this is not meant to be funny, but it will be. With Alan Jeans, his theory, and I got on well with both. Alan Jeans' theory was, he'd say, Mick, keep the side down to 7, and you kick 8, and you win. Tommy says, kick 35, they'll never kick 36. And you think, well, and what that taught me, it taught me a valuable lesson. There's no right way or wrong way of coaching. You have got to coach your way. Because if I took the Jeans philosophy, then I'd be all defence. If I took the Hafey philosophy, you wouldn't even pay any notice to the opposition. So in between, I'd like to think I coached, but very much recognise the opposition, but also recognise the strengths of my team. And, you know, sometimes some teams are stronger than others. So, therefore, you say, look, I don't think we're capable of kicking 15 here. And other teams, you'd say, look, you know what, our best is 12, so we probably need to put the squeeze on the opposition. So they taught me that there's your way of coaching. And even to the point when I first got the job, and I was appointed in mid-January, only weeks away from the first game, and Alan Jones said to me, Mick, just be Mick Mulhouse. And I said, well, Alan, I intend to be exactly that. No one else but myself. And I'm going to live and die by the way I coach, not someone else's way.
Yep.
And that's such great advice, no matter what we do, Mick. It really is. When I look at the long list of clubs that you've been involved in, three jump out at me, Richmond, Collingwood and Carlton. They could be barely greater rivals. What I'm interested in, what it was like moving from those different clubs, and then moving into an environment where they were mortal enemies almost. And obviously the one that sticks possibly in a lot of people's minds is the most recent one, the move from Collingwood to Carlton. What was that like going from the environment of one area and then into the biggest rivals across the road?
Well, you're spot on. There's absolutely no doubt. They're all football clubs. And I will throw in the other two that I coached, and perhaps even St Kilda. There were six clubs. But look, they're all part of one competition, but you couldn't be clearer in the definition of the clubs. It was so stark, and that's what made it interesting. You think we draw the players from the same pool, so therefore they all should be the same. But clubs have actually got their own DNA. Going to Footscray was probably one of the best moves I could have made because it was a workman's club and it suited me down to the ground. They were blokes that rather a fight than a feed, so therefore it really did suit me, and it was a great introduction to football. And I'm ever grateful for the Dogs. And to go to West Coast, that was different again. That was 3 years old and running on empty. They were $8 million in debt and just floundering, and they had no concept whatsoever of AFL, none was all Western Australian stuff. So the great thing about that was going enough in there early enough and setting an agenda and setting something that we stood for. And, you know, you've got to stand for something. You know, in the end, it was just we have to stand for excellence. So if you look at West Coast, if they don't make the eight, they have an inquiry. And down the road, Fremantle, if they make the eight, they have a party. There's two different cultures. So, and then to go to Collingwood again had this very similar to Richmond in many respects, but so far apart. Same type of supporter, just absolutely brutal on anyone else but themselves. But hard workers, did the hard yards through the 20s and 30s, 40s in fact, for Richmond. Deprived the premierships, Collingwood, for a long time. Richmond had great success in the 60s and 70s under Hafey. So the mutual hate for one another, if you like, but had a mutual, like as well, just understood each other. Now, Carlton was different again. That was built on the back of, say, they call it the white collar, but really Carlton, when I got there, had Greg Swan as CEO, and Greg was a floater because he came in from Collingwood, but Stephen Kernan, Carlton was true as true, and two fantastic people. So I was finding it easy enough to fit in there until Stephen said to me, oh, I've got to I'm resigning and Greg's going. And I thought, well, that's handy, because when you're a bloke that's played for Richmond and coach Collingwood and you're at Carlton without a CEO and a president that puts you on, you're in deep trouble. So I really worked out pretty quickly what Carlton were about as well. So, but it was, yes, you're right. What the DNA of each club is so, so different. And what I try to do is make the common denominator between all the clubs was the player pool is the same, and therefore I wanted to see what these players are like and get on well with these players. Now, the older players at each of the club were very, very much embossed, if you like, into the club culture, whereas the young blokes I was trying to make into, you know, something that I saw was required to be a leaf. And I think I succeeded at Collingwood doing that. You know, I probably had four sides at Collingwood. We played off in, if you count the night or the pre-season competition, we had eight grand finals. So, you know, it was a fairly interesting time there. And Carlton, I just needed time. But, you know, when you're at a club like Carlton, there's no time. You're either successful or you're not. And that was learnt pretty quickly.
Now, we're going to have to get you back for the West Coast years, because I really want to focus on them at some stage. And we'll do a two-parter with you, Mick. I know you've got Merv waiting to get to the walk. So we don't want to hold Merv up. Before I let you go, the greatest things in your life, greatest achievements in your life, is it playing a premiership, coaching a premiership, or being king of Moomba?
Well, being a husband, father, and grandfather has been the greatest. But let's take the family aside.
Yeah, let's put them aside for a sec.
The greatest, it won't be the greatest game, but it'll be the most significant game. The most significant game I've ever coached and won was the 1992 Premiership. Because what it did, it broke the barriers of a Victorian-based side only winning premierships. What it did, it opened up for Brisbane, Sydney and Adelaide sides to be able to say, this is a national competition. We legitimised the AFL by winning that premiership, because it had to happen to have someone say, and it was the great Alan Schwab said, his goal or his dream and goal of having a truly national competition meant that someone had to win it outside of Victoria. And we did. And Alan, on that night when we won it, recognised that. So that's probably the best thing that's ever happened as far as a game goes. But it's hard to get away from winning premierships as a player, and it's hard to, you know, I've got four children, so if you said to me, who's my favourite? Well, you can't have a favourite child, you don't have a favourite grand final. What you do is you have, you know, you have a first and you have your last born. And in this case, it's, you know, one of the great games was 1992. We played the Almighty, probably the best side I've ever seen was the Brisbane side. And we got within a kick and a half of them through a side that had no All Australians and just battled to battle for pride, and I'm as in awe of that side, with all the individuals that played in it as I am for the premiership years. Because it's not, life's not about just being at the top. It's about being at the bottom. And you've never coached until you've coached the bottom side and then worked your way up. And that's when you really build those, that rapport, and you understand what it takes to get there.
Lessons learned through a long time in the game, and lessons delivered, I'm sure, to many along the way. Mick, we appreciate your time. Say good day to Merv for me. We're going to get you back for the West Coast years because I reckon they're worth talking about. Thank you very much for being a part of the Legend Series today.
It's a pleasure.